The following programming is sponsored by Don Beischel. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Peasley Media Group. Hey, Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list. And the Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist. And an eagle will fly, and it's gonna be here. When you hear Mother Freedom start ringing her bell, and it'll feel like the whole wide world is raining down on you.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Conservative Voice here on WWDB 860 AM. I'm Don Beischel Jr., here along with my good friend and co-host Gary Heasley. Gary, thank you for filling in for me the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, welcome back. Good to have you back in the studio.
Well, it was my granddaughter's first Holy Communion, and, you know, these are just the things that, you know, you can't miss, you know. And she looked so great in her dress, and I got to walk her up there and everything. So it was just a good, pretty cool thing.
Yeah, you know? That's a wonderful time.
You know, so we got a great show lined up today. Obviously, we're going to be talking to State Senator Doug Mastriano like we always do. I don't know what that was. and then we've got a great guest lined up at 1 p.m. talking about child trafficking, sex trafficking and stuff. So that's going to be interesting. But before we bring Doug on, I gotta bring this up because this is, to me, the height of hypocrisy. So in the 102nd District, they had a debate today between Rachel Moyer, who was challenging incumbent Russ Diamond.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly, and the debate was good. Rachel did well, you know, the whole thing. Everything went well, okay? Russ refused to take the group picture with Rachel after the debate. And now Rachel didn't post it. The radio station posted it. And the woman that did the debate said, this is the first time in the history of her having a debate between candidates where one candidate refused to take the picture with the opposing candidate. But I've been trying to tell people that the problem with Russ Diamond is although a lot of people say, well, he votes the way we vote. Well, first of all, he only votes that way because if you read his book, he only became a Republican because, in his words, the only way you can get elected in Lebanon County is to be a Republican because he was an independent.
Ah.
Okay. And a lot of people don't know that Russ actually won when he was running for school board. The Republicans, they didn't vote for him. You know how you can cross file?
Sure.
But the Democrats elected him. The Democrats elected him as a candidate. Okay, so that's how conservative Russ Diamond is.
Wow.
But this is the pettiness that he goes to. And I posted something which I found interesting, and we're going to have Senator Mastriano talk about this. So Senator Mastriano, as we had talked about before, had passed this bill, introduced this bill for fentanyl testing. In you know, when somebody comes into the ER. And do you know that Russ Diamond voted no for that in the House?
Why?
One of only 31 Republicans, or I think it was 31 Republicans or 31 votes that voted against it. Well, because he's upset with Doug. So a bill that would benefit the citizens and the children of Pennsylvania and save lives, because Russ has his panties in a bunch because Doug didn't support him as for lieutenant governor, Russ decides to vote no because he's mad at Doug.
So we've got, what, 13 Pennsylvanians die every day from fentanyl?
Yes.
And we're worried about who supported who in an earlier election and not about the bodies stacking up all over the state?
Right.
You know,
and this guy, you know, wants the people of Lebanon County to reelect him. And a lot of people don't know how he is. And that's all we've been trying to say to people is that, you know, he's in it for himself. And that vote just proved it, you know, because that vote passed the Senate. And, Senator, I'm going to ask you this. Wasn't it unanimous in the Senate?
Yes, it was.
Yes.
Every single Democrat. In fact, one of the Philadelphia Democrats came over and thanked me for it.
Right. So think about that. In the Senate, every Democrat and every Republican voted for this bill. But Russ Diamond, Mr. Conservative, as he likes to call himself, okay, he voted no. So
wow.
think about that. Okay? So, you know, again, it just goes to the pettiness. And he says that he makes it a point to say that the only reason that Rachel Moyer is running against him is sour grapes. Well, there's no more sour grapes than that.
Right.
Okay, so...
And just to throw a number, as is always puts things in perspective, right? From January of 18 to January 24, 58,000 ER visits for opioid overdoses. Now, we know that over these last few years, the number that are related to fentanyl has climbed every year. And now it's virtually all of them are fentanyl involved. And so you're going to not vote for figuring out how to save people from this scourge? That's offensive.
Yeah, it is offensive. But I think it's important for people to realize, you know, what he really represents. You know, there's many things, and we're going to bring the senator in on this. There's many times that I'm sure Senator Mastriano might not have agreed with something somebody said, but if it benefited the people of Pennsylvania, he got behind it. Okay? And so it can't be about your own personal feelings. It has to be what's best for the people of Pennsylvania. So
always.
Yep. So anyway, that's my little spiel on that.
And it's not like that's politically beneficial. He's not going to get an extra vote from somebody for voting against that.
Right. Exactly. That's what I mean.
There's no benefit.
The only reason he voted no was because it was Doug's bill. That's why he voted against it. You know, let's be clear. There's no other reason that he voted against it. He can say whatever he wants, but there's no other reason for that he voted against it. So anyway.
That's crazy.
It is. So Senator, sorry about that, but I just had to say it because I think it's just it's ridiculous.
It really is. I think it begs the greater question. So, you know, fitness for office, and does he represent the values of Lebanon County? And, you know, and clearly not. I mean, his behavior is very Democrat-esque. So, you know, he's blaming others for what he's guilty of. You know, he's a petulant. He's out there calling people who disagree with him, you know, having sour grapes. And really, it's he that has the sour grapes. You know, I just don't get it. I mean, so he's been in for, I don't know what, 6 years, 8 years?
Something like that.
I can't remember.
Yeah.
But, you know, one bill, and it was on industrial cannabis. Are you kidding me? I mean, so, you know, he runs around and introduces bills, but that's not the hard part. The hard part is working with people to move it out of committee, to move it out of the floor, building a coalition. And apparently he's just unable to do that. I mean, he's being paid a lot of money, and he's only delivered, you know, one piece of legislation. It's kind of questionable, you know, whether anyone in Lebanon County really cares about that, because there's no plants or factories there.
Well, the funny thing is, and so, again, I will respect the request for anonymity, but I have talked to three or four representatives in the Pennsylvania House that serve with Russ, and they are quietly supporting Rachel Moyer against Russ, and they said the only reason they're not doing it publicly is because Russ has this vindictive streak in him, and this is obvious by this vote. But they said he will go out of his way to harm bills that are beneficial to the people of Pennsylvania. And I had one representative who I spoke to, and this was in front of a witness. So it's not like I'm talking out of school, but again, I will not name names, but let's just say they were two elected officials, where the one representative that serves with Russ said that the reason that he's supporting Rachel is that, and in his words, you cannot trust Russ Diamond. That's what he said. They were his words. I do not trust Russ Diamond. So, you know, that's you know, it's not like people don't know what's going on. Anyway, Senator.
It's good that Rachel stepped forward and stepped into the fight. You know, it's really hard.
Yeah.
It's quite intimidating to take on an incumbent in almost any role, you know, whether it be a county office or in the legislature, to step up and take on somebody who's been, you know, entrenched for some time and to do it because of the voting record, because of the issues, because of what this, you know, what the Commonwealth and the nation are facing and how it is, you know, being so attacked. It's admirable that she stepped forward and taken on that fight.
Yep, exactly right. Senator, so let's talk about, so there's a couple things that I do want to hit today. So I guess let's hit the big one first. This, what do you want to call it, a shell game, falseness, whatever, this attempt by the Shapiro administration to fraudulently deceive people and to get their voter information by setting up a website that looks like it is a official government website, when really it's not.
Yeah, so, and this was an interesting discovery here. So, of course, we have the Pennsylvania Department of State registration, you know, vote PA. And so the Democrats have, you know, vote.PA. And you think you're registering, you know, honestly on the nonpartisan Department of State website. It turns out it's actually a Democrat site, and they're going to start hitting you with spam fundraising. And that puts you in the system there on the Democrat side, which is, this is unethical. I don't even see how they get away with it.
And what they're doing now when they collect this information from people who think they're registering on an official government site, then these people are getting inundated with a Democratic propaganda. Is that basically what we're talking about here?
Yeah, exactly. So you're registering and actually you're giving your private information to a project that belongs to Governor Wolf's former press secretary, J.J. Abbott, and it's called the Commonwealth Communications. It's a nonprofit. It's a pack of sorts,
right?
And they're data. You know, it's data mining, but you're inputting your own data in, and you know, unbeknownst, unless you scrutinize the page, you know, at the bottom of the page, if you thumb all the way down, you'll see that it's on a government website.
And they've went to great pains to make this website almost a mirror image of the official website, if I'm not mistaken, too. Is that correct?
Yes. And that's why I said and, you know, asserted that it's unethical. You know, whether it's illegal or not, probably not. But, I mean, it's skirting the edges of ethics. The logo on there looks like the Pennsylvania logo the Department of State uses. You know, the page itself is a bit deceiving. And, you know, that you have to worry about spam on something that looks like a government page. This is really, you know, this shows you, I think, in some regard, that the Democrats are desperate because, you know, they did the motor voter thing unilaterally. Josh Shapiro did. You know, the lawyers looked at it and said that he could do it. I think we should have fought it nonetheless. But then it's not working out because he thought it'd be a boom for Democrat registration. And, you know, between 3 to 5 times more Republicans are registering, you know, when you go to PennDOT than Democrats. That's how bad this administration has become, both at the federal and state level. So I think it's a desperate act here to try to find a way to circumvent that to get their message out.
And also, there are Democratic state senators who are using their campaign websites to promote this as well. Is that's also correct?
Yes. At least 2 state senators are plugging that page. You know, but it's not illegal for them as long as they keep it off the Senate page. You know, if they put it on their Senate page, then we could go at ethics charge.
Right.
You know, and we're in a strange area, though. So let's say that somebody puts it on their Senate page, you know, whether accident or deliberate, it doesn't matter. And if you file a complaint, they won't do anything until after the primary because there's this grace period, you know, right before an election. So we're kind of at an interesting place right now with that.
I guess they're playing on the fact that most websites, people don't scroll down to the bottom of the page to see, you know, that it's, you know, paid for by, you know, whoever the case may be or something like that. And so when they make it look like an official site, you know, people just don't go any further and they don't realize, you know, that they're going to be inundated with, you know, Democratic propaganda.
Yeah, and I'd say use the same level of scrutiny when you open up any link from somebody you don't know, even if it looks like a government, you know, a website. Mm-hmm. If it's not a .gov, don't use it because
right.
then it does not belong to the Commonwealth. It's a fraud.
But like you said, I think this goes to the exactly what you said, that they're looking at this as a way to basically deceive people into registering, you know, as a Democrat, because I think we've seen that registration in the Commonwealth is tilting towards the Republican Party. We've picked up registration within the state. So I think this is an attempt by the Democrats to, you know, try to curb that a little bit, you know, from a PR standpoint as well.
You know, and that's the thing that doesn't make any sense. So we have the state for the past several years has been trending heavily Republican, and we went from 2 million more Democrats in the state bleeding Democrat registrations, and now they're down to about just under 400,000. That's a massive shift in just a couple of years. So then, you know, no one can explain to me then, you know, with that reality, with the momentum, the numbers are all trending towards Republicans, and then, you know, how in important elections like my election or in Trump in 2020, in my gubernatorial 2022, you know, how do you have this massive spike of Democrat turnout? It does not match up mathematically or logically. Something is just smelling wrong.
Well, and part of that, too, is, and we've, you know, we have talked about this many times, but part of that, too, is this quote-unquote uniparty mentality that we have all these Republicans, the so-called Republicans, who, you know, worked against you and I'm sure worked against President Trump as well because it doesn't fit into their agenda of what they want to do going forward. And again, I sit there and I say that the part of this issue here is that somebody like President Trump, somebody like yourself, you know, somebody, you know, let's go right down to Rachel Moyer or Dave Neasley running in Lancaster against Brian Cutler. You know, you've got candidates out there who are not beholden to anybody, so therefore they can't be controlled. And I think that gets to the gist of why you have this quote-unquote faction of the Republican Party that wants to work against their fellow Republicans, because they can't control them. And I think that's what it comes down to.
You know, and Russ Diamond is part of that problem. You know, we see him, he makes a lot of effort and time and money in primaries, kind of trying to crack down on other Republicans that he views as some threat to him or hurt his feelings some years ago. And, you know, and then to say, well, after the election, you know, I moved on and got over and supported the candidate. That's such a crock, because damage gets done, just like, you know, all the propaganda going out with the those that supported McSwain for the gubernatorial in the primary. You know, more than half of the candidates did not get on our side and campaign with us. So we really need to figure out how to make this happen. You know, so we have McCormick. You know, he was knighted by the state party early on, endorsed way too early, you know, a year and a half earlier than anyone should be. I don't believe in the endorsements anyway, but it was just out of control. They wanted to clear the field for him. And, you know, Rebbie and I spent a lot of time with McCormick because obviously we want to win that seat. But, right. You know, I was taken aback a bit, though. I'm going to have an honest conversation here with you guys. That many of those propping him up and supporting him actively worked to sabotage our campaign in 22. So I take a bunch of steps back. But then I'm sitting in Gettysburg, you know, at a Republican breakfast, and he made an effort to get there. He didn't think he could make it. He got there. And then I'm listening to the questions from, you know, my friends in the room, and, you know, they're questions that should have been asked like a year ago. He is going to be our guy. And, you know, why don't we get these things resolved? And it just reminded me in 2022, you know, I win the primary and I'm still being asked the same questions, you know, that were asked during the primary. And I'm like, you know, guys, you know, I'm the candidate. We need to march forward.
Right.
So the thing that really sucks, and maybe you and Gary have an answer to this. So once again, okay, let's say that our side sucks it up like we do with McCain and Romney and Dole and, you know, Ryan and all these other rhinos. You know, it's time to unite behind our candidate. They didn't unite behind ours. Why is it always the grassroots that has to suck it up, you know, and hold our noses while they never do?
Right. And you know, and we've talked about that. I mean, Gary and I, and we've discussed this with you. When James Jones is here, we've talked about that. It's so one-sided. And it's always to that. In other words, you know, and we're facing this a little bit right now with some committee people, that longtime committee people, like, for example, in Bucks County, a good friend of mine, Audrey Strine, she's been a committee person forever, but she's a conservative. She's a Trump supporter. She supported you. And she goes against Pat Poprick all the time. She just said, well, now the party comes out, and now Audrey's been a committee person for, like, you know, over 10 years or more, and they come out and they endorse somebody else against her, okay? And wow. She's been nothing but loyal to the party. Mm-hmm. Okay, but because she doesn't kiss the ring, so to speak, you know, that she's still running, and she spent her own money and whatever the case may be. And I think she'll win. But the point of the matter is that this is the payback you get from the party if you're a conservative.
You know, so how do we crack this nut? So let's say that, you know, in the end, we're like, you know what, you know, screw this. You know, they worked against us in 2022, and we're not going to get behind their selected handpicked candidate for, you know, the run against Casey. And that assures that Casey keeps his seat and doesn't even have to work hard for it. You know, or do we once again, you know, okay, we got to get behind our guy. We, you know, we wish it was an honest race here, and it, you know, wasn't hand selected and endorsed early on and clearing the field and having. So, do we become like them? You know, in petulant, like, you know, you didn't back our guy in 2022, so we're not going to back your guy in 2024. So, I mean, it's just a recipe for defeat.
Yeah, go ahead, Gary.
It really is, and the problem is, of course, that we don't have a unified vision of the agenda for this party. We don't have a unified platform of issues that we're not just willing to chat about from time to time, but to actually go fight for. I was in a room with about, I don't know, 80 or 85 people, something like this, 80 people the other night. And I had a sidebar with, I don't know, four people who are really knowledgeable, active. You know, they're people that do the door knocking and go out and talk to their friends and neighbors about candidates. And McCormick comes up and they said, you know, I'm confused because on one hand, he's saying everything we want to hear. But on the other hand, when we look at his record in history, we see the World Economic Forum, we see the Aspen Institute, we see the Atlantic Council. You know, we see the investments, the private equity play and what that's done, you know, with the overseas transfer of jobs and things. And they say, so he's saying one thing now, but how do we have any idea what he's going to do when he gets into Senate, if it's going to be different than what he's done his whole career? Now, I don't have an answer for him, right? I mean, I'd like to be able to say, well, listen, here's why you can have confidence. But I don't, because another problem is consistently we see people that get elected and then move completely away from everything they've talked about, but then they're incumbents. So they're there not only for that first term, but it's hard to get them out.
Right.
But when you come into the party and you start, you know, I think McCormick's done a fantastic job as a candidate, putting money in the right places early in this campaign cycle, well before 2024, right, which helped them get nominated really early. So they made sure there's no primary, which saves a lot of cash and avoids this open discussion. And to your point, Doug, I think the smart thing to do is actually have robust debate in a primary with good candidates. It doesn't have to get dirty and nasty, but these issues should be addressed. And so I think the other thing that I've noticed is an incredibly active online account. Sorry, so the Twitter account is pumping out messages from McCormick every day. He is clearly spending a lot of money. And so I think they're just counting on being able to say what people want to hear often enough and hopefully avoid those questions, because I don't think this has been addressed.
Well, no, and it hasn't. And the thing is that we as voters have a right to ask those questions. And we've addressed that here on the show many times. And I get, you know, obviously I get phone calls saying, oh, you know, you're dividing the party. I'm not dividing the party. I'm not.
These are the discussions that people are having, whether the party likes it or not.
Right.
You cannot dictate to the American people what they're going to care about and what they're going to talk about. And so we can ignore it and pretend these conversations aren't happening, but I hear them everywhere I go.
Right. And the thing is, to your point, Senator, is that it's come to this point now where we almost have to accept the fact that it might be better for us to lose and cut, you know, cull these people from the herd, so to speak, because the problem is once they become an incumbent, it is very hard to get rid of them. And, you know, so for example, in my district, my rep, Joe Hogan, who I've railed about many times, you know, voted for a Democratic House Speaker, voted against the Second Amendment, voted for abortion funding as a Republican, things he said he was never going to do, and he did. And yet, if he gets reelected, you know, it's going to be even more difficult to get rid of him. And so, you know, part of the strategy that we're talking about, I mean, I'll let the cat out of the bag a little bit, is we may run a candidate in a write-in campaign just so he doesn't get reelected. Now, that's going to mean a Democrat might win that seat. But at the same time, what's the difference? And that, and see, that's what I get to people. What is the difference? If a Republican's going to vote for a Democratic House Speaker, if a Republican's going to vote for red flag laws, if a Republican's going to vote to fund abortion clinics,
and then it doesn't matter if there's a Republican or not.
What does it matter, you know?
But you understand, I think, Senator, that when you're out talking to constituents, they're talking about real issues, and they're concerned about the party not supporting them. And here's the thing. The greatest political opportunity of the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 years, or one of them, because there have been plenty of them, would have been child pornography in schools. And what have we been told in every cycle? Don't talk about that. The party hasn't messaged on it, and we still have huge numbers of people in the Commonwealth and across the nation who really believe it's not happening. So that's been squandered. But when you go, there's a great, and here's the sign of just how powerful the opportunity is if it could be capitalized on. You know, the Wall Street Journal poll that came out on I think it was April 11th, and somebody that supports the show sent it to me this morning. The support, according to a recent Wall Street Journal poll, among black men for Donald Trump has gone from 12 to 30%. What more do we have to show that this America First, constitutional focus, defend the country, defend the borders, you know, this conservative pro-American agenda has real political power? But not just to talk about it, you've got to go implement it.
Yes, thank you. Well, I mean, think about 2020. You know, why did not the Republican House impeach Levine or Wolf for this overreach, for the shutting down of the homes, for the deaths in the homes of the elderly, for the treatment of our schools? I mean, that was so obvious, and yet there was no action, and if people felt alone, that's why they gravitated to a handful of us that were fighting to reopen the state. And I don't know why we always have this feckless leadership. Meanwhile, you know, the Democrats, love her or not, you know, Pelosi, I'm no fan of her, but I do admire the boldness of her leadership. I wish we had a little bit of that courage on our side.
That's a great point. She'll fight for anything, no matter how heinous. No matter how heinous.
Oh, you know.
Right? And, well, and, you know, in Pennsylvania, in the House, we have this now, I don't know, it's been a year or something, right, with this Freedom Caucus. And when you look into what Don Kiefer's talking about and the whole group, right, Wendy Fink and Aaron Bernstein, all these guys, these are real fighters, and they're willing to lean into that fight. What they need behind them and what you need behind you when you, Senator, make a put forth a bill like we should send PA troops to the border to defend the nation, which is the actual reason to have a military, you know, we need the citizens to just stand up and just get more behind these things, because those elected representatives that are willing to fight only have as much power as they have support amongst the voter base.
And that, you know, it's one of the things that we've talked about. We've had discussions within our organizational group in Bucks County and other areas, is we're basically at the point now where we're just going to bypass the party. We're gonna have our own candidates. We're gonna raise our own money, basically have a offshoot of the have our own committee, and run our own candidates, because we're asking for permission from people that disdain us anyway. So why even bother asking for their endorsement? Because you know you're never going to get it. Because they don't want you. They want you to knock doors and work a poll, but they don't want you to be a candidate. You know. So,
yeah.
But you know, to touch on your point, okay, of the, how the Democrats will no matter what the situation is, they stand behind each other. This whole fiasco with Kevin Boyle.
Oh my goodness! Wow.
I mean, you know, here's a guy that is. There's a warrant out for his arrest, and they have a look. I'll let you explain what they did because I don't know if I can keep a straight face and say it.
Well, from the Southeast, we have Kevin Boyle, and, you know, getting in trouble with the law or having some kind of controversy publicly is not new to him. Most of us saw that video of him in the at one bar in Philly, you know, telling the girl off and basically want to get him out of a bar. And he's like, you don't know who I am? I mean, you know, really? So they had to kick him out. And so the police are after him for violating a PFA. I guess he contacted his wife and that he was not supposed to. And so he's, you know, basically a fugitive from the law. They don't know where he is. And the House was in session this week. And they're still voting for him. They have him in as a proxy, you know, by designation, they call it in the House. And it's like, well, wait a second. So you mean to tell me we have a Republican House member deployed to Eritrea on an army mission? He can't vote from overseas, but you're going to take count of vote of a fugitive from the law so you can maintain power. Wow.
Wow. And, you know, and they go into the House, the U.S. House, right? They take this George Santos. And whatever your concerns are with this guy, he's a Republican. He was voting in ways that the party should have liked, the voters did. And they could take him out at the next election, which is this year. But they have to remove him more quickly. They expel him from the House, a Republican-controlled House, narrowing their lead to one. This is not exactly a team that's fighting to win. They're not fighting to win.
No, no. Not at all. You know, and then suddenly the narrow majority is down to, you know, one or two. You have one guy, you know, Ken Buck, you know, resigning early. You have another from a different state that he's waiting to quit until they can't do a special election for him.
Right.
I mean, what is going on in our party? You know, this is out of control. You know, Democrats, you know, they lie, cheat, and steal to maintain power. Our side there is eager to give power up.
It is. You know, Bill Johnson from U.S. House ends up getting a job at a university, running university, about double the salary he had in the House. So they just give him a sweet job. He's out, and now you got to go through the whole process of replacing him. Why not just wait till the end of the term? You know, you ran for these positions, stay into the end of the term. But it's clear that there's a mission. The gentleman from Wisconsin who left the U.S. House went to work for a company called Palantir. Palantir is a surveillance company that was formed with multiple investors, but one of those was a firm called InQtel. InQtel is the CIA's private equity arm. They put, I think, $200 million into Palantir. Then it went public. Wow. Now it's a public company. So in other words, he basically went to work for the CIA. Now, who would give this guy such an attractive offer that couldn't wait until January? Obviously, they're just winnowing down that majority to make it more and more difficult to get anything done in the House. Now, I suppose if the House just kept signing huge spending bills and all the Republicans just went along and said, hey, spend another trillion here, another trillion there, then maybe they wouldn't have these internal conflicts. Because at the end, that seems to be the only thing the U.S. House is interested in doing.
Well, it does make you wonder. And, you know, for us and our movement, for myself and Rebbe, you know, we don't want to be part of the problem. You know, we don't want to get caught up in petulant, petty things like we see from Diamond or in the U.S. House or Republicans last year when we had the majority, 16 of them breaking, you know, handing power over to the Democrats, including all the leadership of the Republican House in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. I mean, who does that? So I guess the path ahead for us is I don't know yet. I don't know. I mean, do we always suck it up like we do with McCain and Romney and others and get behind their pick, their preference? I'd rather not, I got to be honest.
Well, and it's so that's the difficulty of the situation, because if you do stand up and say, okay, you know what, I'm not going to hold my nose, and then the guy loses, then it's going to be your fault. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. But then if you do hold your nose, then the people that you're fighting for are going to say to you, well, why are you doing that? And look, I was in that camp. So in 2018, when my friend Dean Malik was running for Congress against Brian Fitzpatrick, after he lost to Brian, we sat down with Brian and we said, okay, we're going to support you. And we got a lot of heat for that. Okay. But we really thought it was the right thing to do. You know, we ran the primary, we did well, but we lost. And Brian did some things. He supported President Trump in the impeachment, and things of that nature. But it's gotten worse. And Brian has gotten worse. And so, you know, so for me, I sit there and I say, you know what? You know, I tried it their way, and now and then when I got to see firsthand what they did to your campaign when you ran and how they didn't even try at that time, they didn't even try to hide it. You know, when you had the Jeff Greenwood or Jim Greenwoods and the Jeff Bartoses of the world, you know, and the Matt Brulés of the world, they went out of their way to sabotage your campaign as the Republican nominee. You know, why am I going to help them when they refuse to help us? I'm just not. I'm not going to do it anymore.
Well, and it goes, and you know, you're a very, very active person that's deeply involved in politics, paying a lot of attention. You're talking to a lot of people. You're very influential in this process. But that voter out in the street, mm-hmm. where their head is right now, if you're not doing the things that support their needs, you can't get the enthusiasm. You cannot dictate enthusiasm because somebody's registered R.
Yes.
And so it's, you know, there's support within the group, like people that are in the state legislature and people like you that are very active in the party, Don. But there's also these voters we got to keep thinking about. And this party has got to do the things necessary to reach out to them. Winnowing down your House support just to weaken the ability of the people's agenda to get done, that doesn't engender enthusiasm right. on the street. You know, supporting this FISA warrantless search doesn't engender enthusiasm that you have to win on the street. Now, Trump brings that enthusiasm, but, you know, there's a sort of, you know, tepid support for him within a lot of areas in the party. I know county leadership positions or county leaders at various political, at various Republican county committees who have said in the past they won't vote for Donald Trump. So, you know, it's if this party doesn't come around an agenda that is just beyond making money for the people who are active in the party and get down to taking care of the interests and paying attention to the needs of the American people, it will become irrelevant.
Well, think about this, and, you know, Senator, you know, and I'm just, again, I'm going to, because I was so heavily involved in your campaign, I'm going to say this out loud, is that if the party was really concerned about winning back the control of the state, they would have grabbed hold of the enthusiasm that the Mastriano campaign created within the voting, yeah. within the voters, okay? 2.2 million people voted for Doug Mastriano, okay? More than any other GOP gubernatorial candidate in the last 60-something years. If you were really concerned about winning, we created – Doug Mastriano and his team created enthusiasm unseen in the Republican Party in the state of Pennsylvania in the last 60-something years. If they were concerned about – actually winning instead of keeping their own little piece of the pie, and this yeah. is what it is, they would have grasped onto that. They would have said to Doug, hey, you've got these people in your corner. What can we do to, you know, bring the part, keep us together and keep, right. but instead they want to dismantle everything that Doug and his team built.
Well, that's a point too. It's a good point. And when you look back at when this all started to shift in Southeast Pennsylvania, when they started to lose counties that they had control of, the Republican Party had control of some of these counties for 150 years. They lost control in that sort of 1920 timeframe, 1819-20. How much work has been done to recover that? All the work that I know of, the messaging, the analysis, the data work, all that I know that's being done that's really serious and impactful is being done by private entities, you know, the people, if you will, right? The activists that are outside yeah. the party who are really doing the work right. to try to figure out what happened and how do we fix it. And their interest isn't always the activist community, right? The grassroots, if you will, is not really focused on the Republican Party. They're focused on the nation. They're focused on the real issues. That's where the party has to go. If the party doesn't join them and start fighting for the issues, the party will become irrelevant in Pennsylvania as it is in Oregon, Colorado, and Washington. I see yep. more and more a pattern here in Pennsylvania that matches that. But let's go back to this Wall Street Journal poll. It's the swing states. Pennsylvania's in that poll. There's an opportunity yep. right now in urban markets where you've got a large number of black Americans, women and men, because it's male and female, both have a lot more support for Trump now than before. So his 12% in 2020 was astronomically high by historical standards. The Wall Street Journal, not a Trump supporter, is telling us that the black population is now, the black males are now 30% in the swing states supporting Trump. The momentum is huge. They just have to not screw it up.
Right.
And then these citizen groups, the people that are out doing the work, they need to get support, right? I mean, I work with a lot of different groups that just need support so that we can then support people like you, Doug, and the Freedom Caucus and you know, Don Kiefer and her Senate bid, you know, the Pennsylvania Economic Growth Pack, you know, there are Keystone Fair Business Partners. There are a lot of folks that are doing this work. One of the groups I work with is called Keystone Town Hall. And there's just a huge amount of work being done to message around these things, open meetings all the time in multiple counties, just trying to help the public get to the point where they have a better handle on what's going on and how they can be active, right?
Well, so Senator, so let me ask you this question. So I'm sure you've heard the same things that I've heard, that they almost wish that you would go away. this is what I hear, you know, why don't Doug just let it go? Okay. So why don't you tell people in your own words, you know, you've said it before, but I think it's important that we say it again. Why is this so important to you that this movement continue and that the voice of the people be heard?
Pennsylvania, I believe, is a special place in God's eyes because of William Penn and so many promises there, you know, and then the freedoms that we have that over the decades were fought for and people lost their lives for came out of Pennsylvania. And because of these party politics, especially within the Republican circle, we're on the cusp of losing our freedoms and losing our country. And for me, this is no game. You know, 30 years in uniform, I'm no hero, but that was my life being a soldier. I wanted to do it. I did it and I loved it. But the sacrifice I've seen by so many incredible men and women from across the nation and to watch our party too busy, you know, pissing on each other and not uniting, you know, we have a fair fight. You have a winner and it's not the guy or gal they wanted. And so they walk away and, you know, walking away is one thing, but then sabotaging a campaign and rather having a Democrat governor win a race than a Republican that loves this country here really just begs the question, what is going on? And so we're not going away. I could have taken that sweet job like most colonels do and ride off into sunset, making lots of money, being respected, traveling around the world, doing important stuff. But, you know, why get in politics? Because it's all the sacrifice will be for naught if we lose our freedom.
And that's what it boils down to. And that's why this is funny. I was talking to a good friend of ours, Barry Casper, a couple nights ago about this. And I said to him, I said, you know, Barry, I said, you know, we're getting too old for this. And he goes, you know what? I'm never going to be too old for this. You know? And I said, no, you know what? I'm not either. I said, because, you know, I have grandchildren. Now I have a great granddaughter. I mean, you know, you have a grandchild as well. I mean, you know, we're doing this for the future of our families. And we just have to continue, no matter how tough it gets. You know, it can't be, you know, sure, we want to win, but you can't be choosing candidates on their, you know, I love when they say this, you know, the electability, you know, it's got to be electability. Who cares what the guy stands for, but, you know, is he electable? Well, what is that? Is that a code word for he doesn't offend Democrats? I mean, I guess that's what that means, you know. We need to have candidates like yourself, like Rachel Moyer, like Dave Neasley, you know, candidates that are willing to not be afraid to stand up for their beliefs. You know, we've had Stephanie Borowitz on many times, you know, that she's not afraid to talk about her stance on pro-life, just like you're not afraid to talk about it. Our good friend Stacey Garrity, who was not willing to walk away from Donald Trump, and she also helped with your campaign as well and spoke at your events, even though she was told not to do that, okay? You know, but then you have these other guys like Russ Diamond who parrots the establishment. You know, it's almost like he wrote that op-ed about you before the primary. You know, it's almost like he called up Matt Brulette and said, "Hey, Matt, can you write this for me so I can put it on my blog?" You know, because it was basically and then this cracks me up. Okay, that he was blaming you for us losing these House seats, and he specifically targeted Todd Stevens, and if he knew anything, he would know that we couldn't wait to get rid of Todd Stevens, even if it meant a Democrat getting in there, because Todd was even worse than a Democrat. Okay,
wow.
So we were happy that Todd lost, that the Democrat won. Believe that or not, okay? But Russ is blaming you on him losing, okay? You know, so this is just I say to people all the time, you know, pay attention to not only what is being said, but how it's being said. And look at how it mirrors what the establishment is saying, that, you know, the Mastriano campaign cost us all these – you know, down
and,
the tickets.
And that's a bunch of crap.
Yeah.
It was the map, the new maps. If you spoke with any of the House leaders, they were doubtful that they'd win back the House.
Right.
And they were surprised and they had the one-seat majority. It was the new maps. I mean, everyone knew that. So, I mean, he's just so full of it. But, gentlemen, sadly, I have to go. I have another appointment to
that's
get
fine.
Into.
It's great that you stayed on a little bit extra. And
thank you.
You're welcome anytime, Senator. We'll talk to you next week.
Great speaking with you.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So, you know, Garrett, there was a lot there we unpacked, but it gets down to the point of it's interesting how the establishment is able to have what I call the self-fulfilling prophecy.
Mm-hmm.
So they were saying if Doug Mastriano, and I'm just using Doug as an example, If Doug is our nominee, then it's going to cost us these House seats and stuff like that. And then they go out of their way to make sure that that happens. Like a lot of these House candidates did not promote Doug Mastriano. They did not show up at his events. Mm-hmm. You know, how many people didn't vote for these people because they didn't support Doug? I can't answer that question, but I'm sure there were some, okay? I mean, in Chester, let me – you know, I think people need to realize this. So we had an event scheduled in Chester County, and it was supposed to be a meet and greet. And we were expecting maybe 150, 200 people to show up, and, you know, it was at a fire hall, you know, big fire hall. And next thing you know, we had almost 500 to 700 people show up.
Yeah.
For Doug.
I was actually at that event. Yeah. A group that I work with called Chesco United spent a lot of time promoting that, pushing it out, trying to make sure people got there.
Right.
And other groups did too. It was a concerted effort across the whole community to make that event successful. And it was a great morning.
But how many candidates can say that they have to turn a meet and greet into a rally because so many people show up? And that goes to the point of what I'm saying is that you would think that the Republican Party would look at what happened at the Mastriano campaign when we've got 1,500 people at Spooky Nook or 1,200 people at the Fuge in Warminster, Bucks County, okay? And the party would look at that and say, hey, you know what? This guy has energized these people.
Right.
How do we bottle that?
And we're having the same thing happen again right now as we speak, because, again, I'm going back to this Wall Street Journal poll, right? First, we had a poll that came out, Wall Street Journal, Siena, that showed support for Trump among Black American men or Black Americans in general had gone from 12 to 22%, nearly double. Now we're seeing Black American men support now from up to 30%, a number that Republicans couldn't even dream of in the past. You got James Carville losing his mind because he sees what's happening, the Democrat Party ignoring it. The question is then, will the Republican Party be able to capitalize on that momentum, catch that lightning, you know, grab a hold of that zeitgeist and ride that into a broader success in 24? And in Southeast Pennsylvania, I don't see much happening there. I see individual groups, like I said, you know, these sort of grassroots or these, you know, patriot or conservative groups that are trying to do this to drive messaging on issues, to try to support candidates who are really, truly conservative and to get out and engage the population. There's certainly some work being done by the party apparatus, but nothing like you would expect from an organization that has lost several of the key counties. Now, remember, there. I think it's 3,143 counties in the nation. 20 of them decide these elections because those are the swing counties. 3 of them are right here in Southeast Pennsylvania. None of them are getting the kind of attention from a national front you'd want. And the only issue that I see being heavily promoted by the Pennsylvania Party is voting by mail. Now, voting by mail is something a lot of people aren't going to support no matter what, because they've studied it and they understand it, and they know the risks and dangers and the fraud, and you know they know why France eliminated mail-in ballots, because they're just fraught with fraud, right?
Right, right.
So there's a lot of that. You're never going to get those people to vote by mail. But what is the advantage of getting people to convert from voting in person to voting by mail? Because that's the mission, is to convert them. You know, they say we're going to do it with low propensity voters. Well, you don't know that those people are going to vote Republican. So this whole mail-in ballot thing, in the last 4 years, that's the biggest issue the Republican Party has pushed. Not inflation, not a real message on abortion. We just keep using abortion to lose because we can't message effectively on it. We've got to get this shifted. And I'm really excited about what I see in these numbers from the Wall Street Journal and what I see in these grassroots communities. And when you see people like Rachel Moyer stepping up and all these other candidates over the last few years, I know candidates that have run for multiple elections knowing there was very little chance, if any chance, of winning. But they got out there because they were willing to take the fight to the enemy. And that's exciting. And that's what we have to keep building on. That's the energy we have to get to push forward. And, you know, and we've got issues. You know, I know we're tight on time, but there are issues we could capitalize on so effectively. One of the most powerful issues the leftists have used since 2020 is the January 6th issue. And, you know, just this week, there were two whistleblowers that came out publicly out of the military and started talking about the events on January 6th. And these are guys that were inside the tent. They were seeing what was happening on the inside. And they came out and said specifically that that the generals that were in charge at the time of January 6th, when these decisions were made to deploy or not deploy the National Guard. Remember, Donald Trump offered up 10,000 soldiers, right? Mm-hmm. And said, you better deploy something. You've got to protect that Capitol. Pelosi and the gang got together and said, nope, we're going to fill the crowd with government agents. We're going to make sure the National Guard doesn't come. We're going to leave the place undefended. Then we're going to open the doors, invite everyone in, and then spend the next 3 years arresting them. Well, you know, the question about why no one defended the Capitol is one that's been burning. Well, these two guys came out. I don't know if you want to hit this clip.
Can you clip three?
But the
clip number three?
Yeah, clip three. One of the soldiers came out who was sitting at the table with the folks that were making decisions on that day. And he makes it clear that they lied. When they testified in Congress, our military leaders lied about what happened on January 6th. So we'll listen to some of this testimony real quick.
Senior general officers of the United States Army, General Charles A. Flynn and Lieutenant General Walter E. Piatt, have acted contrary to those values. Generals Piatt and Flynn have lied to Congress, to federal investigators, and to the American people about why it took so long for the District of Columbia National Guard to deploy to the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2021. Their distortions contributed to a deeply and fundamentally flawed Department of Defense Inspector General investigation and to deficiencies in other official inquiries.
So here you've got a guy who was there. I think he is ranked as a colonel who just testified before Congress. You know, he's got a lot of risk right now, right? They're going to come for him. So this is a guy that's doing this only because he loves the country, supports the Constitution. There is no promotion for this guy.
Right.
But the guy who lied, this general that lied, his name is Flynn, he got promoted to a very serious command position in the Pacific. So what's going on here? And then you come around full circle again and say, when does the Republican Party pick issues like this and start really pushing it? Now, there's some other stuff we're not going to have a chance to get to, but one of the issues we're going to talk about next hour, the issue we're going to talk about next hour is this child trafficking problem. And we're going to have with us a woman named Kim Kelly. Now, Kim was born in Brazil, lived in Mexico, and was trafficked across the border a couple times. We're not going to, you know, spend a lot of time on her personal journey. We'll touch on that. But what, you know, what is going on is that we've got now an industry that, according to the most recent numbers, is about $50 billion, a $50 billion industry, and it's growing very quickly. And, you know, we had Senator Marsha Blackburn, and this is where Republicans do great work. Senator Marsha Blackburn got on the floor in the Senate and came out and said proactively, there is a child trafficking problem. These kids are being sold. She went into this during this Mayorkas discussion. She went into this in great detail. And she talked about the 85,000 kids that are missing. The number's far greater than 85,000. It's far greater. But the 85,000 for a specific period of time is what people could prove that are actually gone and can't be found. So, you know, here you've got a nation that views itself as moral and just. And while we're feeling this way about ourselves, we have this lie being told that there are unaccompanied minors coming across the border, that these children are somehow just you know, straggling around the desert and somehow end up in the United States. You know, and when we get on next hour with Kim Kelly, we're going to go through this a little bit. We're going to talk also about what's being done to fight back, because there's some great stuff that's being done and more that can be done to fight back.
Well, yep. So folks, make sure you tune in for the next hour, because we're actually going to be hitting this topic. It's an important topic that, unfortunately, nobody likes to talk about, and it really needs to be talked about, because this is going on. This is like the dirty secret under the dirty secret. And we're going to get into that a little bit, and you know, it's going to be a great topic. So you're listening to The Conservative Voice here on WWDB 860 AM. We'll see you in a few. Color and white and blue.